Let's speak to Brian Short now. This is really interesting. My Guide Service.
Yeah.
What's all that about?
It's a new guide dog service. I mean, we are traditionally known for the guide dog service that's been in place for a number of years, since 1931. Mm-hmm. Now, that's still our bread and butter service, but we've now got a new additional service offered to anybody who's got a sight loss problem. And by that, I mean any uncorrectable sight loss problem, which is a sighted guide service, because we do realise the guide dog population and the guide dog partnership population is only a small proportion of those people who have got a sight loss. And a dog's not necessarily for everybody, and also using a long cane is not necessarily for everybody. And we realised that there were a lot of people out there who had a sight loss problem who were being socially isolated because of that loss and could benefit from something like a sighted guide. So I train volunteers to become sighted guides, to be matched to people who've got a sight loss, who want to go out and about using that person as their eyes, if they do normal activities like anybody else.
Wow. So in other words, if you don't want a dog, you can now have a human helping you.
You can. I mean, the thing is, you can have both. I mean, what we are finding is some guide dog owners maybe want to do certain things where it wouldn't be suitable to take the dog, or they might want to go to maybe take the dog for a free run and maybe feel a bit vulnerable on their own in a park. That's where we can supplement what they get with a sighted guide. But yeah, there are some people out there who maybe a dog isn't the right thing for them, and they want to get out and about and maybe go to, say, the gym or go to the theatre, have a walk out, just a pleasure walk, and they want to do that with somebody who acts as their eyes and keeps them safe in the environment as they walk around.
Where did this idea come from?
This idea came from some research that guide dogs and other organisations who represent people with a sight loss. And we did some research 3 or 4 years ago, and we're looking at social isolation and looking at the kind of population that we were actually targeting when it came to the services we provided. And we knew that guide dogs only provided services to a small proportion of people who actually were visually impaired or had a sight loss. So the expectation was, because there were a lot of people out there who were mainly from the older age population, were becoming isolated in their home, a way of maybe getting them out was by using a sighted guide. And there wasn't a reliance on having to learn new skills using a cane or new skills using a dog. If they had a sighted guide, all they needed to know was where they wanted to go and how they like best to be guided. And by being sight guided, it means that the person who guides them walks slightly in front of them and helps them safely negotiate any environment by acting as their eyes and previewing any obstacle in the way as they actually walk through their environment.
It's very interesting. Let's leave this to one side for 1 second, because I want to find out about the political correct thing.
Okay.
So we don't use the word blind anymore.
I'm from old school. I've been in guide dogs now since 2002. I trained from 2000 to 2002. I trained as a rehab worker for visually impaired people. And the terminology that I normally use to cover an umbrella of people who've got some residual vision down to those who've got none, I use the term visually impaired.
Right.
But it's very subjective. And some people say blind, some people say partially sighted, and some people say visually impaired. It's very subjective, depending on the person, how they view themselves.
So there's nothing incorrect?
No, I would say not. And the problem was that there was confusion caused in the past by the official registration terms when somebody was registered as visually impaired. Mm. They were registered as either partially sighted or blind. Now, lots of people were put into the blind category but had some remaining vision. So they would say, well, I'm blind. Well, you've got some residual vision. So I think that caused confusion. Mm. So now they've widened out the descriptions. So somebody can be registered as partially sighted or sight impaired. That's one category. And the other category is now blind or severely sight impaired.
Right. That's great. I'm glad you sorted that out, because I've always wanted to know, because as somebody uses the phone in, I sometimes get embarrassed whether I've said the right thing. So I'm really glad you said, because some people say I'm blind, or some people say I've got visual impaired. I'm visually impaired. So I'm really glad you put that into, that's fabulous. Now, I love this idea of My Guide Service. I think it's a great idea. So are you looking for volunteers?
I'm always looking for volunteers. I'll work for the Liverpool Guide Dogs team, and I cover the whole of the Merseyside and Cheshire areas. So I'm looking for two things, really. I'm looking for volunteers who can be, we would train them up to be efficient sighted guides, who can actually offer 2 to 3 hours per week on a regular basis. They would have their travel expenses paid from their home to the person that they're providing assistance to. We offer full training. They get a certificate to confirm that they've actually completed the training successfully. We do a disclosure and borrowed service check on them as well, so they have a certificate there confirming that they're fine to work with anybody who could be regarded as vulnerable. And I'm also looking for any service users, and by that, anybody who has got a sight loss problem, which is not correctable, who finds that they're maybe not getting it as much as they'd like to, and maybe think they would benefit from a sighted guide. So from both aspects, people who are service users and potential volunteers. I'd love to hear from either one of those two.
So this interview now could be opening a door for people that had no idea they can have people to help them.
Yes. I mean, we have it on our, the thing is, it's on our website. We do advertise it wherever we go, but it's about trying to, I'm trying to work my way around the region and the area to see all those areas where people who have a sight loss problem maybe go to make sure that we can actually maximise the impact of them knowing it's being available and then using the service. Because we do know there are a lot of people out there who are not getting out much at all. This service can help.
It's interesting, isn't it, Brian, that some people can really cope, and he'll be listening right now. There's a man called Brendan who is blind, visually impaired, has a white stick, lives over here now, came from Ireland, unbelievably independent.
Yeah.
Comes to the pub I work in on a Sunday, walks in smiling, having a drink. Some people are like that, but some people are at the other end of the spectrum, aren't they?
They are. And the thing is as well, when we do the training with the volunteers, we do visual impairment awareness training as well as sight to guide technique training. And what we do is we actually we do simulation exercises using blindfolds and using simulation specs which simulate the visual consequences of certain eye conditions. And that gives them an idea, a little bit more of an understanding of what the practical consequences are if you had a sight loss. It's never going to be what it's like because you won't know until it happens to you. But at least it gives you an understanding of what somebody might be, what the situation somebody might find difficult because of their vision loss, and helps you to appreciate the kind of impact that you can provide if you actually you act as a volunteer.
I've got to be honest, I'm really glad you came on because I had no idea this could happen. So you could change. Somebody could be sitting there right now thinking, my life could change. I could actually get some real help.
You could. And the thing is as well, the My Guide service, the Sight to Guide service is what it needs to be for the individual. So it could just be a Sight to Guide service, and that's what the person wants to do. It could be a Sight to Guide service which is going to move on and help the person move towards more independence. Maybe a long cane or maybe a guide dog, but it doesn't have to be. It's what it needs to be for the individual.
How are you funded?
We're funded totally by charity. We're a charity who's funded totally by giving the generous giving of the general public. We've got no public funding, no government funding. So anything we get is through fundraising and donations.
Any idea how many dogs are out there?
Well, within guide dogs, guide dog partnerships, nationally, we have just under 5,000. Wow. I think it's the target that we're looking for at the moment. But if you consider, through the research that we did before we actually developed this new service, it was reckoned that there were about 180,000 people out there with a sight loss problem who weren't necessarily guide dog owners or long cane users who were being isolated because of their sight loss. So 5,000 to 180,000, there's a massive amount of people out there who could maybe benefit from this sighted guide service.
Tell me, is there a problem, because we hear about some of these savage dogs out there, is there a problem for guide dogs when they are with their master or whatever they call it, the person they're looking after, and there's a violent dog there? What happens in that situation?
In that situation, there's something now called dog attacks. So if there's a dog attack, it's regarded now as a hate crime through legislation. So if we have a guide dog owner who's out in a situation with their guide dog and their guide dog gets attacked, they need to contact their local police station and say that they've been a victim of a hate crime, not their dog's been attacked, because a guide dog is regarded as a mobility aid. If that dog has been attacked, it then prevents the person as the guide dog owner being out and about, and that inhibits their ability to actually do anything like anybody else.
That's amazing. There's something else I've learned. Do you know, you're really educating me tonight, Brian. I'm really pleased with you. Now, what age group for volunteers?
For volunteers, anybody is 18 plus. That's the criteria. And any volunteers have got to have correctable vision, because we need to give the person who's actually requesting the sighted guide service the reassurance that they're being guided by somebody who does have full vision.
Is it a hard job to learn?
I would say it's not. I think it's very rewarding. I think initially people get quite nervous about the responsibility of guiding somebody, and that's quite natural because you haven't been in that situation before. But we do lots of repetition during the training course, and when I first match somebody to somebody with a sight loss who wants a service, I do a matching visit where they have a chance to chat to each other. I give them an opportunity to have a little walk outside to see how they get on. And then anything that they do together, I supervise that partnership and provide any kind of support input that either one of them requires.
And you give people confidence, and this can open huge doors for people, can't they?
It can, yeah. Like I said, for some people, I've got a variety of people who currently have a My Guide partnership, ranging from somebody who is a very confident long cane user who just wanted somebody to act as his eyes when they went to a gym. So that's what his volunteer does. They go to the gym, and the volunteer acts as his eyes when it comes to using the gauges on various machines. Otherwise, he's very independent. I've got somebody else who's using their sighted guide is a springboard towards more independence. So sometimes what they'll do together is they will actually go and the person who's got a long cane will actually practice their long cane whilst the volunteer just observes them. They're not a professional mobility instructor, but they can observe them to make sure that they're safe when it comes to road crossings, and that person's moving towards getting a guide dog, and it can be everything in between.
Brian, is it a big job to learn to use a cane?
To use a cane, yes. As a rehab worker, that was my bread and butter. I was a long cane trainer rather than a guide dog trainer. So the dogs just take the complete mickey out of me because I'm not a dog trainer. But when it comes to a long cane can be really valuable if you want to develop a mental map of your external environment. And it's a really good way, if you want to move on to become a guide dog owner, learning long cane skills to actually learn your physical environment is a good way of learning the mentally mapping the environment that you're going to use with the dog. Because if you imagine the person learns the route, they've got a mental map of that route, they know where physical landmarks and clues are. When they work with the dog, all the things that they would have hit with a cane, they suddenly walk around with the dog because the dog helps them to avoid obstacles. Now, in that situation, that's great, but there can be times when either the person and or the dog can get a bit confused because they work as a partnership. If the person has got the background of doing some long cane skills, they will have the mental map, which could help them get on track with their dog when it came to actually performing external travel.
Now, where is the law and where do we stand with these unbelievable stories we hear about taxis not taking people with a dog, restaurants not taking people with a dog? Where do people actually stand?
What we'd say is the guide dog partnerships have got the support of all of the mobility. They call them mobility teams. I'd say that there are guide dog teams throughout the country. There are 20 of us. I'm in the team at Liverpool, which covers the Merseyside and Cheshire area. If any of our guide dog owners have a situation like you've described, they contact my colleague, Penny Williams, who's our engagement officer, and Penny will then contact the various service provider to remind them of their responsibility under the law to make reasonable adjustments to allow mobility aids like guide dogs to be in their premises. And from there, if they do not do that, we can then help to move things forward in a legal way, if that is necessary.
So in the law, can people refuse to take a guide dog in a taxi?
No, only if they can demonstrate that they themselves individually have a severe allergic reaction to that.
Right.
And if that is the case, what the taxi firm should be doing is that when the person rings and asks for a taxi and says that they're a guide dog owner, they should be sending along a driver who does not have that kind of allergic reaction.
Now, what about in a restaurant?
In a restaurant, a guide dog should be allowed in a restaurant, any part of the restaurant, apart from the kitchens, because there's a health and hygiene risk there. But a guide dog has been trained to sit, be as a mobility aid under the table with the guide dog owner. There's been lots of training in that area and should be allowed to be in those kind of environments.
Here's a silly question, but a serious question. Mm-hmm. Do the dogs enjoy it?
The dogs love the work that they do. It's the breed, the combination of the Labrador and the Retriever, love that kind of work. I mean, even if the dogs are not suitable as guide dogs, they sometimes have a career change and move to something which is more suitable for them. So if you get a dog which has got a lot of scent distraction, its sense of smell is such that it gets distracted by any smell, that dog might not be suitable as a guide dog because it might be too distracted to guide the person, but it might be wonderful as a police sniffer dog.
Wow. I love that job change. You just made me laugh.
Career change.
I love that. The dog with a career change. You're a nice man. Interesting. Now, I've got to ask this question as well because I love questions like this.
Okay.
When do the dogs poo? For instance, if they're in a restaurant, how do they know or how does the owner know?
When the dog's going to go to the toilet. Or what we call it spending. Spending is the phrase that they use collectively for the dog to go for a pee or a poo.
Yep.
What you do not want to do if you're in the company of a guide dog owner with their dog is use the term busy, busy, because that is the command for the dog to go to the toilet.
You shouldn't have told me that.
Yeah, so if you see a dog circling, that'll be probably why.
Right.
So what they do is, as part of the training regime and the dog's eating habits, they try to regiment it so that the dog goes to the toilet at particular times during the day.
Yeah.
There will be other occasions when the dog might have an accident, but the majority of the time, the dog has got a regime which you can follow where the dog actually goes to the toilet either in the morning or the evening or both.
Wow. Is there a downside to having a dog?
The downside to having a dog, I can't speak from a personal perspective. I would say being a guide dog owner is a wonderful thing for those people who have a dog. What guide dog ownership as a positive in comparison to somebody using a long cane is that you've probably got the ability to be more spontaneous than you would do with a long cane. With a long cane, if you don't know a particular area, you need to learn that route, and that can take time. With a guide dog, as long as you know maybe the map of how long you've got to go, maybe five streets and then one turn to the left, because we use what we call a down curb principle. So a dog comes to a curb, the dog waits for a command to go forward, left, right, or back to where they came from. If the person can get themselves roughly to where they need to get to, they can easily do that with the dog. Mm. Now, that's where they might want to have a sighted guide on an ad hoc basis, maybe in a city centre. They're going to meet friends. They want to go to, say, Liverpool city centre. They don't know exactly where the destination is. They know they can get into the city centre, but they don't know the specifics of the shop they need to get to. If they get to that point, it could well be somebody who's done level one of the My Guide training, which is basic sighted guide training and visual impairment awareness. They could be around there to say, okay, then, would you like some sight assistance? I can provide you with sight assistance. And in that situation, the dog's not actually working. The handle's down on the dog's back, and the dog's just being led like any other dog.
Wow. Brian, to finish off, let's go back to what you're looking for as well, volunteers and everything.
What I'm looking for is anybody who would, we now call a service user, I used to call them clients, anybody with a sight loss, who it's an uncorrectable sight loss, they're an adult, aged 18 plus, and they're physically able to get out of the house, but what is maybe preventing them from doing what they want to outside of the house is because of their sight loss. So anybody interested in a volunteer to provide that kind of input, contact me. The flip side is the volunteer. I'm looking for anybody aged 18 plus who's also physically able, to physically mobile, they can walk around, who can provide 2 to 3 hours per week to offer that kind of sighted guide service on a regular basis to people who've got a sight loss problem. And just to add to that as well, if there's anybody who asks for the My Guide service who is a service user, what we also offer free of charge is level one of the My Guide training, the sighted guide technique training and the visual impairment awareness training, to any of their family and friends who provide a support network to that person so that they can be armed with the tools to help that person and to help their independent and external mobility as much as possible.
That's fascinating. Now, am I right in assuming that people also take dogs in, don't they, to train them initially? To explain that before they become trained?
Trained, what, you mean the guide dog?
Yes.
Yeah, what we have at the Liverpool Centre, we have, well, the dogs start in puppy walking from age 6 weeks. We breed our own dogs. So from 6 weeks, they're placed with a volunteer, puppy walker, who helps to socialise the pup until about the age of 12 months, 12 to 14 months. At that point, if everything's gone okay and the dog's not going to become one of our breeding animals, we then move the dog to training, and that's when they come to the centre. So at the Liverpool Centre, we have people who are guide dog trainers who do the training of the dog from age 14 months up to about 16, 18 months. And that's basic commands, stopping at curbs, moving around obstacles, crossing roads, etc., etc. And then when it and also covering their width and the body width of the person that they're actually guiding. So the dog gets used to guiding the person beside them. They call it right shoulder work. So they're covering their own body within the person. Do that, and then when it comes to advanced training, that's when they go to a guide dog mobility instructor who's then looking at matching the dog. We've got people in their mind who are on the waiting list for a guide dog, and they look at the specific situations that that person might want to go into externally and then try and get the dog trained up into those particular situations.
Is it easy or hard to train a dog?
I would say I'm not a trainer, I'm a dog trainer. Like I said, if I was a dog trainer, the dogs would just run rings around me.
Right.
But it's down to repetition and trying to use in a positive way the things that they like. So Labradors are like walking skips. They will eat anything. So if you can actually use in a positive way their love of food, you can introduce food, they perform an action, then you withdraw the food and the dog continues with the action. So if you can use that, that's what they normally do. Yeah. They do that, and you've got a retriever. So the best combination, the most successful guide dogs are normally a combination of retriever and Labrador. Labradors will eat anything. Retrievers are intelligent dogs who like to think that they do what they want to do. So you've got to trick the retriever into believing it's doing what it wants to do. So the combination of intelligence and willingness works really well as a guide dog.
Oh, I love it. I love your attitude. Right, how do they find out all this information?
Okay, well, if anybody's interested in either the guide dog service or the My Guide service, the first point of contact is our office. So that's the Liverpool Guide Dogs team. And the telephone number is 0118 983 8749.
And again, very slowly.
0118 983 8749. And my name is Brian Short, and I'm responsible for the My Guide service.
Is there a website for them to look at?
Guidedogs.org.uk.
Is there a Twitter?
The Twitter, I would have to find out from my colleague Penny. I don't run that service, but we do have, and we also have a Liverpool Guide Dogs Facebook page.
Right, fantastic. All that we will put up on City Talk's website on Pete Price's page. We have a directory, so all that information that Brian has just given me. Brian Short, I think you're a very nice, interesting man, and you certainly sell your cause with a great passion.
Thank you very much, Pete.